Hey, people. This is episode 222. That's three twos, 222. And on this episode, it features Doug Verby. Doug is the host of a bi-monthly YouTube show called STL Cast. It's a show in which Doug talks to creative types from around the St. Louis area. What got Doug the inkling to start a show was his love for not just the film, but the mythos and the craziness surrounding Justice League film, more specifically, the Snyder Cut. Doug liked it so much that he got the original or the creator or writer of a book entitled Release the Snyder Cut by Sean O'Connell on his first show. And since then, he started doing shows with different other creative people from around the area. So please check out his show, his YouTube channel. That's STL Cast. Check out this episode, which you're obviously doing because you're hearing this. And then, you know, just keep supporting all the local St. Louis guys. And but make sure you extra support us first. And that's all I got. I hope you enjoy the episode. Like I said, it was Doug. It was me. It was Bombcast J. And it's coming to you after the normal bomb sound, which should be right about now. I mean, we can just jump right in and do it because we're missing a guy tonight, so yeah. Which is okay. But yeah. Hey, we are back and we have a different episode here because one, we're doing something we haven't done since the middle of the pandemic. Is someone Zooming in? Well, I take that back. Mac Basler, he joins me via Zoom all the time, but we're down John, who bailed on us at the last minute, but we're not surprised by that.
No.
But we do have me and Jay here, and we do have a guest via Zoom. So, and we've teased this for the last few weeks. This is our official Snyder Cut episode. But before we get to that, we do want to get to our guest. And we appreciate you coming on late on a Monday night, Doug.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm Doug Verby. Went to school with Jay and started the STL Cast and big Snyder Cut fan. So, love talking about it.
Now, the STL Cast, you're a pop culture podcast as well, right?
Yeah, I kind of got into it because a bunch of YouTube guys, you know, like the Film Junkie, Dave Pena, and Chris Wong Swinson, they were, you know, pop culture people. Tyrone Magnus really liked what they were doing, and they followed the Snyder Cut quite a bit. And you know, I really liked that. And, you know, I'm a teacher, so kind of got bored with the pandemic online teaching and said, why don't I do something like that? And I kind of shifted to St. Louis area because I really like Tim McKernan's podcast. And, he's kind of stuck in his radio contract, so he's not really taking guests right now. He's just doing his gambling and questions of the week. And so I said, why not bring in some guests from St. Louis? I know St. Louis. We can do pop culture every once in a while. But did get the author of the Release the Snyder Cut book on, and he was gracious to do that. I teamed up with another guy. So I like podcasting, started it. It's a little hobby of mine, and we'll see where it goes.
How long have you been going so far?
Started recording in December. I went live in February. So, you know, I've got 7 episodes. You know, we'll see what happens. I just talked to the athletic beat writer he's from St. Louis.
Yeah.
Athletic beat writer for the Colorado Avalanche, Peter Baugh. Knew him. He was a high school student for us. Real cool dude. Pretty good conversation about Mizzou journalism and things like that. I've got a great episode with Jeremy Bachman, who's the owner of Strange Donuts. Phenomenal conversation. Great dude. Just, you know, fantastic. So that'll be dropping in a couple weeks.
Strange Donuts got a little bit of nationwide notoriety when Chris Hardwick came through and did, after his stand-up, went to Strange Donuts and had post stand-up time there. So that's pretty cool. Now, you come out weekly. How are you coming out right now?
I'm doing every other week.
Every other week. That's how we started as well, too. And then I finally convinced enough people to either be my co-hosts or make interchangeable parts. Jay somehow stuck of late.
Yeah. I'm the only one available.
It turns out he has the least life of the other guys. So that's why he's climbing the rankings. We have this ongoing feud of who's the number two host of the show.
Yeah.
And that guy has been securely locked down from the pandemic, but just to be safe with his wife and stuff. And he'll eventually come back on, but I got to tell, I mean, it's got to be bad news for him to see Jay on every week. It's actually got a needle at him just a little bit.
Just a little.
He's the kind of guy that would take that personally. So when he comes back, I expect hot takes left and right.
Yeah.
So was the Snyder Cut, was that the original topic that you started with on your show, or is that what just
not
really
exactly? I think that was definitely the inspiration for it.
Okay,
so all these YouTuber and live streamers, you know, just getting started, and you know, there was a big movement, a lot of YouTubers, Twitter feeds, but you know, that kind of inspired me. I like talking pop culture, love talking anything Snyder Cut. And, you know, that market was pretty full as is. So I'm like, well, I wouldn't mind doing a live stream. And I know people in St. Louis. And
yeah.
Something with a local flair would be pretty cool.
I think to what you said about how many people were talking about it, I think currently Restore the Snyder Universe is like at 2.5 million hashtags right now. Yeah. Something insane. It's ridiculous.
It two Thursdays ago, Snyder shadow dropped the Justice is Gray edition. And I think there was a push because he kind of talks and back channels to some of these fans, and his network of fans know when to trend something when HBO Max is watching. And I think he shadow dropped the Gray edition with no marketing just to see what the fans could do. And they topped the 24-hour record for a movie ever. Endgame had held the record.
Wow. Now, so, you know, obviously this is our 222nd episode. Jay has been a guest probably three or four times before he became a co-host. And I used to own a comic book store, so I'm not throwing my pop culture cred out there for no good reason. It's not me bragging, but what I want to say is...
No more than normal.
No more than normal, my humble brags. But what I want to say is that have either of you ever seen a movie that has garnered this much polarization? One, because it wasn't that well received among fans. And two, and I'm talking compared to Blade Runner and all these other movies, has had such a mythic following for a version that we weren't even sure we were ever going to get.
Yeah, it's really just one of the most fascinating stories in cinema history. You know, a guy makes his movie, you know, the studio had been behind him with 300 and Watchmen and Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman. You hire a guy to make his Justice League, and then new management essentially comes in and just trashes him. He has a terrible tragedy in his family, and they trash his movie. And
yeah.
So whether you like the you know, the artistic integrity part of it, or the ASFP, suicide prevention aspect of it, kind of the culture that's, you know, the primary culture that's developed around it is really kind of exciting. You know, the YouTube shows, the Twitter hashtags, just, you know, people that are really introverted, you know, like the Wonder Meg and the Nerd Queens, you know, people that have dealt with mental health and things like that, they organized an online convention for Snyder last summer, and their numbers for Snyder Justice Con beat some of the Comic-Con panels. They went up against Comic-Con, the virtual Comic-Con. They beat some of those panels. So everybody loves a good redemption story. And for him to, you know, get this, which, you know, people argued if it existed or not. People argued if it was ever going to come out. And then when AT&T bought it and HBO Max was an option, it was like, well, there's your opportunity
And it was a slow bubble. Like you said, when we first heard about it, it was like, well, what could be there?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think at no point up until Max started releasing details, I don't think anyone realized that Snyder had cut his film to 4 hours.
Yeah.
So how Joss Whedon cut it down even further is amazing. And we'll get to some specifics of the film. Well, actually, we haven't yet to really break the film down because we've been kind of waiting till this moment. But it's I said this to a guest that was on a couple weeks ago. I said, it's amazing, but it's almost bad business to let someone eat up that much film on something that they don't know. I mean, because they let him just film a lot to make this movie. And his vision clearly was drastically different than almost every other hand that had a part in this film.
Yeah. And I was wondering how much of it he added after the fact just because he knew of how things were received with the first version of it. So I know he did some refilming.
I think it was the last two scenes, really. I think it was the nightmare scene and then the essentially last scene of the movie were complete and total reshoots. Everything else was there and basically shot in 2016 in principal photography.
So the nightmare scene, that's the one, that's the essentially their version of the post-credit scene with the evil Superman, the Injustice version of the world.
Right.
But that means Jared Leto and all of them came back to shoot again with him if he had to reshoot that. See, I was under the impression that Jared Leto had filmed more stuff. Well, that's interesting too. That's pretty.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you this. Let's at least talk a little bit about the film and some of the differences that was between. I'll be honest with you. I as a guy that owned a comic book store, as a lifelong DC fan, I got into comic books originally because of Superman and Batman. I don't want to say disappointed, because at that point DC had already and Warner Brothers had already lowered my expectations, and there were still some parts of the original film that I liked, but overall, I think my grade for it, we always do a 5-point scale here, but I'll give a letter grade to just try to help illustrate this, was like a D. It was a solid D to me. It felt choppy, and at the time we didn't know why, really. Yeah. It felt like the plots were kind of just hastily thrown together.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a film that I ever needed to watch again. I certainly wasn't going to pull the trigger until this came out.
Right.
But man, it took, God, I guess what? Help me out here, because I didn't write my notes down on this because of a busy day, but I think it was 20 minutes into the film, it already felt like a different film.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying to think of what at the beginning, though. The Wonder Woman scene was a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I'm drawing a blank now. I just rewatched part of it this morning, too.
Well, I think that's a good point. I think there was a lot of... And trust me, not all of the decisions that Zack Snyder made landed for me either. But there was... I mean, he could have made his 4-hour version into about a 3.5, which would have made sense. But every scene that felt like the transition from scene to scene was choppy was because Zack Snyder had those scenes, like the Wonder Woman scene. That was a much more fleshed out scene with a lot more dialogue than originally.
Yeah. A lot more blood too.
Yeah. I was pretty excited for Justice League because, you know, I'm a Zack Snyder fan. I like BVS. Yeah. I like Man of Steel. And I remember going to the theater, couldn't find anybody to go with me. So that was kind of depressing. Went to the IMAX ready and there's like 5 or 6 people. And I'm like, oh man. And so I sit through it and, you know, just from the very first scene with the, you know, the Henry Cavill CGI mustache scene, the cell phone, I'm like, oh man,
they
did it. 'Cause there were rumors that, you know, WB had redone the entire thing, starting with Tom Holkenberg getting replaced by Denny Elfman. And people kind of was like, well, it's okay. Joss is going to finish this. And the studio was lying to us. And basically, they chopped it to shreds. And every scene was either recolored, you know, new music. Everything was re-edited.
And in some cases, bad jokes added.
And so I left and felt like I'd been cut. Punch in the gut, and I just every time I watch Man of Steel and Batman vs Superman, I'm just like, it's a shame that Zack Snyder doesn't get to finish his at least trilogy, because, you know, I put it out there on Twitter one time, it would be like if you watch Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back and the studio promises you Return of the Jedi in their trailers and in their marketing and they give you Star Wars the holiday special.
That's a good analogy. So let's dial it back away from Justice League a little bit. So my decision or my beef with a lot of the things that I didn't like about BVS and Man of Steel had a lot more to do with some of the story decisions. And one in Man of Steel, obviously, is that seems to be very little care for life, you know, but I think there's a redeemable movie in Man of Steel. I think one of the ultimate tragedies of this whole thing is Henry Cavill Superman is a very damn good Superman.
Yeah.
And we may not get to see that again. And then with Batman versus Superman, Dawn of, maybe the longest named superhero film of all time. I don't like, now he drew from actual, you know, story from comic books with Metropolis and
Gotham
being side by side. I think that's a poor decision.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense from a story standpoint. Obviously there's a million memes that are made about Martha and all of that. But there's some questionable things I have about the way the Batman's, Batman's known for his drive and determination, but it seems misplaced badly throughout and uncharacteristically Batman in some sorts. But ultimately, what the whole movie is about is the fight between Batman and Superman and ultimately Lex Luthor. Now, this is a hot take for some. He didn't do a bad job as Lex Luthor. What's his name?
Jesse Eisenberg,
yeah. His Lex Luthor was, I thought, the right kind of maniacal, driven, and crazy Lex Luthor that works. I think people hated his performance more because I don't think a lot of people like him.
Yeah. Let's see, if he would have been more like in The Social Network,
yeah,
as that character, as Lex Luthor, I think it would have worked a little bit better, where played more on his awkwardness. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see. I mean, it was a character choice.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the fight between Superman and Batman was a well-shot, well-executed fight.
Yeah.
And they took the right amount of inspiration from Dark Knight Returns. And there's, again, Wonder Woman is awesome in that movie.
Yeah.
And my problems with a lot of the DC movies has to do with, I think, Warner Brothers' fear of doing CG in the daytime. I think there's some things about Zack Snyder where he's in, like, we've all had, there's been a lot of jokes on how Zack Snyder hates color throughout the years, but they're still, at their core, there's things to love about those movies. And that was what drove me to go see Justice League in the theater, like yourself. And right out of the gate, something did not feel right about Superman and Cavill and his mustache. And I know everybody was like, well, it was fresh off of Mission Impossible. You know what? What's harder, to put on a prosthetic mustache or to CGI a mustache? I mean, what choices were made there?
Yeah.
Well, Paramount wouldn't let him. He was contractually obligated to keep the mustache, and they asked him, and they basically told him, you know, no. And that there's rumors that they offered to, pay the money to CGI the mustache back in. They told him no. And part of me thinks, you know, Christopher McQuarrie just said, screw these guys.
Yeah.
Zach. I'm not going to mess with it. And it wasn't their problem. They had no obligation to do it.
No, absolutely. That makes sense.
Drop money for it.
Well, so what were – the parts that stand – I mean, there's a lot to point out in Justice League that's drastically different. One, let me start with some of the quirkier parts of this that I wasn't quite as comfortable or quite as happy with. And I'm going to start with maybe what was the worst kept secret about all of these, and that would have been Martian Manhunter.
Yeah.
I did like his look, but it did make sense how Lois got to the scene, which was badly done in the original, how, like, bring in the big guns and it's Lois, and it just didn't make sense. Martian Manhunter kind of giving her that pep talk to get up off the couch and get back into the workforce or the world, that made a little more sense. Where it was a little odd for me was the final scene where he's outside. It seems for the Batman that we saw in BVS and this Batman to this one, it's almost talk about comparison. It's almost like the Old Testament God to the New Testament God.
Yeah.
This one is way more accepting. He's like, well, I guess he's a good guy. He just told me he was. I liked seeing the guy, but it wasn't my favorite part of the film.
Well, he wasn't even originally in it. He had a Green Lantern in that spot.
Oh, that's right. And we saw the concept art for that.
Yeah, HBO said they couldn't use him because they're planning something for HBO Max with Green Lanterns.
A series. Yeah, a series. Yeah. See, so it's weird, too, because that lets you know, and maybe, I don't know, maybe the author of the... What was the name of the book that was written and the author?
Sean O'Connell, Release the Snyder Cut.
Release the Snyder Cut. Okay, so maybe I don't know if he addresses this in the book, but that kind of lends a lot to the fact that there was a lot of post work that Snyder put into it to get that back into it and stuff. Yeah. You know, that's, again, going back to how amazing this, the fact that this film exists is, is that's just extra money that someone let him play with to go back and do this again.
Yeah, a lot of extra money.
Yeah, HBO Max, everybody had said, most everybody, there was some disagreement about if the Snyder Cut existed in form. Principal photography was done. Post-production was not. The score was kind of written. And so, you know, the past, since May of 2020, when it was announced to when it was released, there was a significant amount of digital effects and just a significant amount of work that needed to be done. Tom Holkenberg had to, you know, write the entire score again. And basically, he set a Guinness Book World Record for the longest movie score. He scored almost the entirety of a four-hour movie.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
I think, you know, to something you had mentioned earlier about introverts and stuff, I think one thing they did better in this one, too, and I mentioned, I referenced jokes not landing sometimes.
Yeah.
I get why some comic book purists aren't so hip to this version of The Flash, but this version of The Flash in the Snyder Cut was a way more likable character and a much more fun character than they tried to. Joss Whedon tried to make him fun and he tried to do things with him, but more lines and more screen time helped out Ezra Miller's character a lot.
And I thought some of the early jokes were kind of forced in the first one.
Yeah, absolutely.
This one, it was more natural the way he was acting.
Yeah, I didn't really know what to think about Ezra Miller after the theatrical cut, but this one, you know, he had some great scenes. The two prison visit scenes,
unbelievably characterization for that guy.
The first one is heartbreaking. His dad tells him, you know, stop, come seeing me. You're wasting your life. And then, you know, he's got a lot of great jokes. The introduction. For him meeting Iris West, I thought was awesome. Kind of jokey at the beginning of the end. The rescue's kind of cool. Kind of a, you know, people didn't expect the needle drop, but it's really kind of a cool moment with this awesome CGI going on, showing you kind of the Speed Force from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously he's got one of the best moments of the movie where he saves the league by running in reverse in time a little
bit. Yeah. Something that they did not, he didn't have. I mean, his biggest moment in the Whedon cut was literally pushing a sword, I think, into, you know, and then obviously running enough power to get to charge the battery. But yeah. In DC, for those that don't know, DC's arguably the most pivotal character in all of DC, and some of the things that's revolved around him and the Speed Force and his time traveling abilities and things like that. They gave weight to the Flash in this, which was what made it a better character. Because we already had Wonder Woman, already had enough weight. Wonder Woman had her own film at this point, and it was an enjoyable film. And Batman is there's enough screen time from TV, cartoons, movies for Batman to always have weight. Superman. So that, you know, the two characters that suffered in the Snyder Cut was Cyborg and Flash, and I think they fixed Flash better. But they also gave us a little more Cyborg also.
I thought Cyborg was a lot better in this.
Yeah. They gave us the whole origin of Cyborg.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of the narration of his dad at the beginning, showing kind of the evolution of Cyborg. That was very kind of Dr. Manhattan-esque, kind of the origin of Dr. Manhattan, which is a, you know, obviously I love that scene. But, I wasn't a big fan of the New 52, you know. Liked a couple of books there, but largely turned it off, especially Superman. So Cyborg in the Justice League was kind of new to me. You know, really couldn't care less about the character in the theatrical version, and here he's one of the biggest components of it. I mean, that was a huge swing for Ray Fisher.
Yeah, and what a and again, going back to the mythos of this film and the bizarreness of its existence and just everything that swirls around it. I mean, it's even gained more steam in terms of the Whedon relationship, you know.
With all of Hollywood now.
Yeah, with all of Hollywood. But I mean, just you almost have to wonder, was Cyborg stuff cut because Whedon didn't think it fit the story? Or was it cut because it turns out Whedon's a colossal asshole?
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to say.
Probably a little column A and a little column B.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, you know, given the benefit of the doubt, I think Cyborg was probably the easiest character to cut.
Absolutely.
He's newer and younger and less of a name.
And but, Whedon's kind of a purist, so he probably doesn't see him as a league character.
Yeah, that's true too. But to be honest with you, if you're going to market a Justice League film in this day, which they needed to, who? I mean, obviously Batman. You have Batman and Superman. But in terms of kids, to get kids to go see your movie,
yeah,
Cyborg might have been the easiest draw, considering he has the most current screen time of anything between Teen Titans Go and mm-hmm. Young Justice and all that stuff.
Yeah, if they would have aimed it towards kids, though.
Yeah, but that's still, you know. Yeah, they made toys for it, so, you look like you had something. I was going to let you say. So the ending, too, which was the whole... In fact, I still have a lot of problems. I made a joke about it earlier, how DC can only CG fight scenes at night. But the entirety of the ending, even though we were at the nuclear power plant still and it was still dark and stuff... Let's just say the whole third act is probably what boosted the whole letter grade of this film up from that D to that C. It's maybe even a C plus for me. I mean, yeah. I don't think it's a great film. I think it's a watchable film. Certainly it went from a film I was never going to watch again to one, if it ever came on TV, I'd probably let it play.
Yeah.
But the third act was way better in this film.
Oh, it was incredibly better. I remember just sitting there, like, being amazed by it compared to what I had remembered. Like, I was quiet, sitting on the edge of my seat because I didn't know what was coming, especially once they took that family out.
Yeah, and it's almost kind of tough to call it a third act. I mean, we're talking about the story circle style of telling a story with three acts. But, I mean, what was it, eight parts? It was eight. I mean, so the last three parts were probably way worth it, And that's not to say I didn't enjoy the Superman Flash race from Joss Whedon's cut, but still, not that this character needed it, but Superman felt more super in this act.
Oh yeah,
he shows up and actually kicks the shit out of Steppenwolf in the third act.
Oh, and it wasn't just him; it was everyone was doing something. Yeah. Cyborg was huge in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think everybody's got their role. Batman's kind of invading the perimeter and keeping the perimeter safe and
calling the shot, calling the plays, so to speak.
Yeah, running the plan. Wonder Woman and Aquaman are kind of the muscle. Cyborg's connecting with the Unity. Flash is working up the charge, and then Superman comes in and saves the day and adds more muscle. And it's kind of a brutal end for Steppenwolf, which, by the way, is leaps and bounds a better character.
Yeah, looked better.
His journey. Mm-hmm. One, he looks fantastic.
Yeah.
The armor was amazing.
And that's the thing. People are like, oh, it's not comic book accurate. Well, comic book accurate, Steppenwolf has this giant, he's green with this giant green.
Yeah, it's a Jack Kirby design. That doesn't play on TV, or in movies. We should have brought that up, too. Visually, the changes, Steppenwolf is probably the biggest.
Yeah.
And I equate it to the fact that even though the first Transformer film was good, and the other ones were garbage, one of the problems I had with it is you can't tell the Autobots and Decepticons apart because they got rid of a lot of color. Steppenwolf was so dark and dismal looking that he kind of just, you lost him in scenes on the original.
Yeah.
And now because his armor looked so much better, it gave more weight to the character. Yeah. And he seemed a bigger threat in this film because of some of the things he did. And you're right, the boom tube decapitation of Steppenwolf was a brutal way to... end it, but I guess that's the other thing we should bring. Well, we'll get to the big bad here in a second. You just brought up a name that we have not talked the entire time so far about, and Aquaman. And yeah. Aquaman had the Aquaman Batman scenes were more drawn out and more fleshed out than they were previously. And another film that was not a bad film, was a very entertaining film in its own right. Not a grand slam, but a good film. They didn't need to put a lot of focus on Aquaman in this film either, but I think they did the right amount of focus on him to make him entertaining, and he was a badass.
Yeah, and I had to remind myself at times that this came before the Aquaman movie, because, like, the Trident, talking with Mera, and, I can't think of his name.
Willem Dafoe's character.
Showing up. I had to kind of remind myself... We learn about them later.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so I think it was a great lead into the Aquaman movie. And again, you know, the Aquaman movie definitely has its own tone. But, you know, I had a lot of fun with it. You know, it kind of plays like a, you know, Indiana Jones kind of, you know, fun. And you'd never seen visuals like that underwater. I thought James Wan did a really nice job with that. But Snyder put in all the pieces there. And Wan took, you know, Falco and Mara and Jason Momoa and, you know, really made something out of it. You know, Jason Momoa was not a household name when he was cast for Batman vs. Superman. And now he's, you know.
Well, he was very popular and a little bit of a breakout from the first season of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And had Conan been a better film, he would have been a household name. But that was just like, I left Game of Thrones, I'm in a big budget movie, and that movie tanked, although I watch it every time it's on TV because I'm a huge Conan fan. But Jason Momoa is certainly someone that radiates charisma on the screen. And his Aquaman feels very different than any Aquaman we've ever seen in the print. But
yeah, that was the big thing for me too, because I tried reading the comics multiple times and could just never get into the character. But he was so much more appealing here.
Yeah,
Aquabro.
It's almost like Jason Momoa is so accepted in because of his Khal Drogo run and some other things that it's the one guy that nerd culture doesn't really get mad at that he's not the same as he was in the comic book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it does take inspiration from Kingdom Come and the Peter David run.
Yeah, the Peter David run is great. Yeah. That was. Go ahead.
The hook hand and the long hair and the beard, and they kind of played on the King Arthur in Kingdom Come with the long hair and the beard, and you know I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it makes sense that you would have a Pacific Islander as a guy that's in the sea. Plus, he's you know a hulking guy. I mean, Aquaman's supposed to be dense and really prominent, and so he definitely has changed everybody's opinion of what Aquaman can and should be. And now he's, you know, if he's a little bit of a surfer dude, bro, like that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, right? Aquaman. You know what's fun too, with the exception of Chris Hemsworth, mm-hmm. The superhero look of the DC has, if they've done one thing better. They look more heroic than the Marvel counterparts. Because, yes, guys get in shape. Like, you know, Chris Evans got in shape. And Star-Lord. Chris Pratt. All the Chris's. Yeah, Chris Pratt got in better shape. But Cavill, Momoa, and even Ben Affleck, they are very tall, imposing guys.
Yeah.
And they're when they bulk up, they look like the superhero drawings that we've come to. In fact, I'd argue that Cavill looks more like Superman than any Superman they've ever done.
Yeah.
He is very great. Now, we love Christopher Reeve, and he'll always hold a soft spot. Dean Cain was a very good-looking one. And I know CW has done some things, but Cavill, to me, he worked as Superman. Like I said, one of the things that's really really crappy about all this is if we don't ever, it's probably a safer bet that we're not going to get, you know, a Snyder universe. But that's what sucks about this coming out and being more enjoyable is that what does it lead to for us?
Yeah. I mean, people are asking for it. I think, you know, what did this, you know, Snyder continued what he was going to do in 2017 and what it did was going to open up everything. And so the possibilities for a Ryan Zhang Adam series or Martian Manhunter series or a Cyborg series or a Deathstroke movie, that's what was trending today. It's probably already over 100,000 tweets. Joe Manganiello himself tweeted something out about Deathstroke HBO Max.
Yeah, and he put out the pictures and all that stuff. Yeah, he's done a real good job.
By the way, should be the easiest of them. I mean, he was talking about a low budget Gareth Evans directed, you know, from The Raid.
Yep.
You know, just badass origin story for Deathstroke. Whether, you know, when the Ben Affleck versus Deathstroke movie kind of fell out, you know, the possibilities are there. And it's just, you know, WB with, you know, largely under new ownership or leadership really doesn't want to continue it because they don't want to admit how badly they screwed up in 2017.
The only problem right now with people wanting a Deathstroke film, and I'm all for it, is the release of the Untold Origins of the DC Universe this past week. Have you saw this?
No.
No.
they officially labeled Deathstroke as a pedophile.
Yeah,
which he was. I mean, they alluded to it in Marv Wolfman and George Perez's run on Teen Titans with the Judas contract and all of that.
Yeah.
But they just come out right and say that he was sexually manipulative of Tara. And so it's a tough one because she was 15 at the time. Yeah. And that's going to make, well, and that's going to make it tough, you know, but also DC Comics aren't selling so great right now. So people might just sweep it right under the rug. You know,
well, I mean, a Joker movie made $1 billion. So you can take really screwed up people and make movies about them.
Yeah. And that joke, I mean, that's a, you know, we reviewed that film on here. I don't know that I told people, one, it doesn't work as a Joker film for me as much, but two, it works as an incredibly good and brilliantly acted film. And that's as dark as a film for a character that you're going to get. I mean, that was that last 20, 30 minutes of that film were brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Well, I mean, it was Taxi Driver and
absolutely. You know,
it's crazy. I mean, that's where the inspiration was. It felt like 1970s New York. And the fact it's like, well, who directed this? The Hangover guy? That's pretty cool. So it was, you know, Todd Phillips' homage to Scorsese and Joaquin Phoenix was amazing. So it wasn't a comic book movie. It was, you know, kind of a really cool case study when, you know, people have, you know, are really down. It's, you know, it plays to me just like Taxi Driver.
Well, and it goes, for me, it goes back, and I'm a huge stand-up comedy fan. I'm a huge fan of comedy in general. People that can do comedy can do anything. Whereas people that can't do comedy will never be able to do comedy. And Todd Phillips showed that. Now, let's go back to what I mentioned. Speaking of if they would have continued or if we do get a continuation of this universe, it's a shame if we don't, because Thanos is a very awesome bad guy. Mm-hmm. He's as awesome as you could get in Marvel. He played well on the screen. He was acted well. He was believable in the role. But Thanos is not as big a bad as Darkseid is a big a bad. And we got to see him. You know, one of the best lines in all the comics was when they were doing the, it wasn't even the year of the villain. It was before that. I can't remember, but it was a bunch of villain covers and it was just one shots that throughout that month, you know, DC always has a fifth week.
New Year's Evil, I think.
So it might've been, yeah. It might've been. And, there's a line in there where there's a line in the comic and I'm butchering it cause I haven't read it in years, but the line, so to speak, what it says is Darkseid. They say, you know, why is Darkseid bad? And he says, I'm not bad. Evil is Darkseid. Yeah. He is the personification of evil. That's what he is. He's more of a force of nature akin to Galactus than he is like Thanos, who's a malevolent dictator.
Yeah.
Darkseid is simply driven out of evil. That's all he does. And I got to tell you, as a guy who's a huge Darkseid fan, who's a huge fan of villains and comic books, he looked awesome in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great voice, great appearance. I was kind of shocked that they actually showed him beforehand, but they were kind of throwing everything out in the marketing, and it was all tracking every single day. And you know, that's what I like about Snyder is he's not afraid to cast an unknown, and he cast this guy Ray Porter, and everybody's like, and that was part of the mystery of people kind of, you know, dissecting through all the parts and subplots of the Snyder cut. You know, and everybody's like, I think Darkseid was in there, and people figured out that Ray Porter was in there. And they're like, who the hell is Ray Porter? And it's like, he's a Shakespearean actor, and he is a audiobook guy.
Which is what you need in Darkseid.
Yeah.
I mean,
the voice is pretty close. I mean, he's done it on a couple live streams, and you know, it's amplified and things like that, but it's not overly dubbed. That's mostly him, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, and he was perfectly scary, if that makes sense.
I
want to see a CG'd Omega Beam effect on screen, because you know the Omega Beams in comics, they turn at 90 degree angles, and I want to see that on the big screen, and I want to see him and Superman fight for the first time, and that will So what I'm saying is the way I feel about after seeing this film, there's a redeemable final arc to this that we're not getting to see as of now. Yeah. And that's a shame.
Well, yeah, the ultimate battle is going to be Superman leading the Justice League and the Army of Men to beat Darkseid and taking them down. And so you always want to see Superman face Darkseid. But before that, you know, you watch some of the flashes that Cyborg has during the resurrection scene, and you see the Omega beams where Darkseid kills Aquaman, and you see Superman in the Batcave holding Lois's body, and Darkseid just puts his hand on his shoulder because Superman without Lois succumbs to the anti-life equation. That is some, you know, I know a lot of people, and especially WB at the time, couldn't handle, you know, bad Superman, but look at the traction that Injustice has gotten. I mean, there's something there, and
I'm
kind of uneasy about that as well. But it's a hell of a story.
And I would argue, look at DC as a whole right now. Metal, death metal. That's it's not the Justice. I mean, even Grant Morrison, who's a you know, as a whole, is a mature writer and a darker guy. His run on Justice League is much more upbeat than what we see right now.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of a weird phase overall. What I think we're in the middle of, and that this comes from DC's, and I love Jim Lee. I've met him a handful of times. You know, all 5'2" of him. But I think DC and Warner Brother are a bit rudderless. They're a bit directionless, and that's a big problem with all these films. One thing Marvel has going for it, and one thing that Marvel and the House of the Mouse did right, is they put one guy in charge that had a clear vision in Kevin Feige. Mm-hmm. And Warner Brothers, you know, they brought in Jeff Loeb, who has been hit or miss, has told some incredibly great stories. He's also told some stinkers.
And he didn't do much with Marvel TV.
No, he didn't. And then they, you know, and then when they brought Joss Whedon in, I mean, I, for one, was not negative on the fact that Joss Whedon was coming in to finish this film. I thought it was going to be a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, here's the guy that kicked off the Avengers franchise. It can't be bad. But then, you know, the movie tanked, and I think they switched away from him. I just don't think, whether it's in print or in film, there's much direction, which makes me raise this question to you guys. Who's in charge of the CW DC universe, and why isn't that person being leaned on to do more?
Yeah, that's actually Greg Berlanti. Yeah. They're bringing him in to do a little bit more, and so he's actually going to be the executive producer on the Green Lantern series. And so they're going to do that and probably spin off, use that. Jon Stewart and Hal Jordan are noticeably absent from the HBO Max Green Lantern series. And so they're thinking the series with Alan Scott and Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz and Guy Gardner in the 80s, which is...
That's awesome.
He's like an 80s bro.
Well, and it'll make sense why his hair, he has shitty hair, and that'll yes. work because it's going to be the 80s. So.
And so it's going to be kind of a you know, kind of like the last episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. It's going to be three stories in three different time periods that kind of intersect, and it's going to lead into the movie. That's a rumor, at least. But Greg Berlanti is definitely... going to be a part of that, especially now that Jeff Johns is pretty much out of the company.
Yeah, I said Jeff Loeb. I meant Jeff Johns is what I meant. Yeah, sorry.
And I agree with that with, you know, about Kevin Feige. Everybody says, oh, they need Feige. And Jeff Johns was, I thought I'd be a great move as well. But the way that he treated Snyder, the way he, you know, cozied up to Joss Whedon and some of the things I've heard about him during the reshoots has been just... pretty disgusting.
It's a shame, too, because Jeff Johns did something that I thought was impossible to do. He took The Flash and made it better than Mark Waid did.
Yeah.
And Mark Waid, you talked about Peter David's run on Aquaman, and it's a super underrated run. Time and Tide Again is a great story. I suggest you try really giving it an effort. Yeah. It's really good stuff. It's long. It's like Peter David's run on Hulk, which Hulk is my favorite character. Peter David... when he tells a story, he even did it with Daredevil. His Daredevil's pretty fun, too.
Yeah.
Peter David tells his plan from the get is like a 10-year story, and I think he kind of does that to maybe increase his job security. I don't know.
Yeah.
But his he was on Aquaman for every bit of 5 years, if I remember right. I mean, he was on it a long time. But anyway, back to Mark Waid. I mean, Mark Waid kind of had the same style run on Flash. And Mark Waid gave us the Speed Force. He gave us Savitar. He gave us Max Mercury. He gave us
Barry.
He brought back Barry. He did
Impulse.
Yeah, Impulse was one of his. And I bought Impulse at a role-playing game convention in Springfield, Missouri, when I was a freshman in high school. We just went. There was a table, and it had I only bought it based on the fact that I really liked Umberto Ramos's art on the cover.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to buy this. That issue like shot up to $20 in the first month, and I thought, I know how to collect comics. I'm good at this. But you know, that's what made when Geoff Johns came in and wrote Flash, and it brought really, man, he really emphasized the Rogues Gallery to make them every bit as equivalent as Batman's. And so when he was picked to be creative direction for the DC universe, the DCU, I was like, well, this is a good deal.
Yeah.
But boy, you talk about shit in the bed with expectations.
Well, it seemed like a honest fit. And that's the thing. When Snyder was actually plotting out the direction, and he didn't set out to do a 30 film plan like Marvel. He wanted to do, you know, his five films like Lord of the Rings. And then, you know, he could spin off for other creators and directors and things like that. His original plan was he got around the whiteboards with himself, Geoff Johns, and Jim Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Johns wrote it out. Jim Lee drew. There's pictures of him because it's on display at Dallas. That was the original, you know, five-part arc. Basically, it's a Superman story. Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman. And then Justice League 1, 2, and 3, and with all these tying in things, but it was supposed to be a five-part kind of epic, Lord of the Rings-esque. And that's the irony. Everybody was like, well, Kevin Feige, and there's nothing wrong with Kevin Feige. The guy is the best producer in the history of movies, let alone comic book movies.
Certainly somehow became the most powerful man in film.
Well, I think, you know, he earned his bones
because
he worked on something like 13 previous films, I think, between the Fox and Fantastic Four and X-Men. He was on those productions. He saw what worked and what didn't work. And that's
mostly
the great thing about Feige.
Mostly what didn't work, and he learned.
Exactly. And that's the great thing about Feige is that he will have people leave projects, but it all happens on the front end. He never has the crap that happened with Snyder on the Justice League or David Ayer with the Suicide Squad being, you know, getting his movie completely recut. None of that stuff happens.
Closer to home in his own backyard, the same stuff that happens with Kathleen Kennedy over in the Star Wars universe.
Exactly. He lays out the parameters, and if they can't agree with it, they don't move forward. You know, Patty Jenkins was on Thor 2, and she left the project and things like that.
And the direction of Thor maybe is the most welcome surprise in all of the movies, other than Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah. And the irony is that, you know, you've got Kevin Feige, and the only guy with a plan was Geoff Johns, Zack Snyder, and Jim Lee, that original plan. And I'm not saying Zack Snyder should be that guy, but, you know, having him do his small little universe so he could do a couple side projects and then lead up to Justice 2 or 3 on HBO Max, you know, there's got to be dollar signs there because, you know, bringing new subscribers on because there's a base.
Yeah, and I think at the end of it, this all boils down to old Hollywood versus new Hollywood, I think.
100%.
And I think Warner Brothers being old Hollywood was scared to death to put that much power in someone. And Disney, for, you know, all their faults and stuff here and there that they've missteps that they've done, they were willing to push the envelope and be new and let someone do something and create a studio within the studio and let it operate fairly autonomously. Now, we know that Disney has a hand in it because they're a marketing genius, but that Warner Brothers is just stuck in the mud when it comes to superheroes.
Marvel Studios started with this independent studio type mentality. Mm-hmm. And so they were able to get their footing, you know, do their solo movies. And if they only reached, you know, $200-300 million, people weren't all over their butts. And then they, you know, they put it all together and get the Avengers. And then, you know, nobody's going to question Kevin Feige after that.
No. And you've used the word irony a couple times talking about, you know, this stuff. But the irony even more so is, and we've talked about this on this show quite a bit, on how that – it seems that Warner Brother just wants to do stuff as different from Marvel and Disney as they can. But the irony is that with the new partnership with HBO Max, they're perfectly poised to do some of the same things that Disney's doing with Disney Plus. And they're just not. You know, well, hopefully they will.
Yeah. See, I kind of saw it different. I felt like they saw what Marvel was doing and they rushed into it. So yeah,
that could be.
Rather
that could
than
be,
a
yeah.
slow build with these characters, oh, we're going to throw them together in the third movie.
Yeah.
Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy work? Let's do Suicide Squad right off the bat.
It took Marvel, we could look it up, but I think it took Marvel roughly the first 10 films before they got a $1 billion franchise yeah. every time out.
Yeah.
And it's almost like DC wanted to, well, they got a $1 billion franchise. We could do that right now.
Yeah.
And not wait.
Well, that was another big problem. You know, they come out with Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, which everybody says, oh, they should have done the solo films, which I don't agree with. You didn't have a Black Widow solo film. You didn't have a Hawkeye solo film. You know, same thing with Lord of the Rings. You don't have individual, you don't,
yeah.
nobody watches Lord of the Rings and says, I need that Gimli film, you know? You know, why
that might be pretty good off
solo film. Nobody says that. And so I don't think it's comparable. If you're trying to do something, do something different. The problem was they looked at Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, and Suicide Squad, and they thought they should be making $1 billion. And granted, Marvel definitely primed the pump. And but when you compare those three films to the box office of you know, the Dark Knight trilogy, you know, especially the last two components, you can't do that. You know, the first film of a series is always going to do a little bit less, even if it's a Superman film. Mm-hmm. And it did $660 million, which is pretty damn good for the first installment. And so they went after the fast buck. And the problem, their biggest problem was they got in their director's way. If you hire Zack Snyder to do a Zack Snyder film, let him do a Zack Snyder
yeah.
film. If you hire David Ayer to do a David Ayer film, let him do a David Ayer film. The rumor on that is pretty substantiated, is that they let a trailer company cut his final cut, which is just asinine.
That's crazy.
Like, yeah, they had a really positive reaction to the Bohemian Rhapsody trailer, so they decided to go ahead and let that company cut the entire film, which is insane to me. And
but
you
it,
know,
I don't know
what to think about. So go ahead.
No, it's insane to us because we don't live in the thin air of Hollywood that where they make crazy decisions on a whim. You know, I mean, right. This is Hollywood.
Yeah.
I mean, say what you want about Suicide Squad. The damn movie made $750 million and won an Oscar.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even David Ayer's original film. That's the thing that's like, they couldn't even take a win from that. They're like, oh, you know, it should have been better or whatever.
And yeah, the all of these films, that's the thing with all of these films. We as diehard fans of comic books, and I say we as in the community, we all consider them failures, but commercially, they made money. The only factor that we're not putting into this, again, going back to old school mentality of a studio and the factor X being the studio, is the greed of studio executives was $600 million wasn't enough money. Yeah. We want $1 billion. And that's insane.
And the damn tomato meter.
You know, oh, yeah.
That's one of the good things about streaming is that, you know, some of these critics who don't deserve to be called critics, you know,
there's very few real critics left. That right.
I miss Siskel and Ebert. They were, you know, they were critics in the true sense, and they just, you know, you'd go to a couple critics. Now you go to Rotten Tomato, and you see the green splatter, you see the red tomato, and people are basing their opinion on that. And a lot of this stuff goes out, and it's complete and total groupthink. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know,
and
all
it,
this,
and it comes out before the movie does.
What's that?
It comes out before the movie does, so everyone's like, yeah, exactly. Well, I'm not going to go see it now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people are like, oh, the Snyder Cut is too long. And admittedly, it is. But it's like, didn't you just watch a four-hour Wanda and Vision movie, basically?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, come on.
This has kind of changed things. And too long is, in comparison to what? That's what I would tell them. If it's too long, they broke it in nice, convenient eight parts for you. So it's, you know, there's no, to me... And with the exception of maybe the Irishman on Netflix, and which I enjoyed, but it's hard to me to justify calling anything too long on streaming in the world of streaming now, because yes. you're not sitting in a theater that you paid $20 for your ticket for. So who gives a shit how long it is?
Yeah.
Just be happy you're getting content at when you break it down between all the things you watch streaming, probably cost you about 35 cents. Yeah. You know, I mean, enjoy it.
And I, you know, I saw Hateful Eight in the theater, and I will definitely see the Snyder Cut when it comes to IMAX.
That's the perfect thing to me, because my favorite director of all time is Quentin Tarantino, and people tell me, I've got good friends that say, well, look at, and I'll tell them how great Inglourious Basterds are, and they're like, well, it's great except for that 35-minute bar scene. I go, that 35-minute bar scene is a clinic on acting.
Yeah.
That's a clinic. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, just drug on. I go, yeah, to dipshits. I mean, just, I mean, in the Hateful Eight's the same way. I had people tell me, and I very jealously have a very good friend. She lives out in Arizona. And at the Alamo, Tarantino brought it through in the Alamo with his actual fully extended version of it and his full and filmed the way he originally filmed it. And she got to see it that way. And, you know, she sent me a message on Facebook. She goes, I was just in a theater for 5 hours watching a Tarantino movie. And I said, that sounds like a best Saturday yeah. to me. That's
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's I won't ask us, because we really dove into a lot of the minutiae and the behind the scenes things on this film and stuff way more than we typically do of our, you know, of our. Kevin Smith influenced world of dick and fart jokes and reviewing films. So I won't ask us to give a rating on the Snyder Cut per se. But what I will ask, Jay, before we do throw it to Missy, and I've understood that you're the first guest that's ever been briefed on what we do on our show before. So I will ask, you know, let's give, just go around and give a closing thoughts overall of our expectations versus what happened with this film and what the lasting legacy of it will be. Jay, I'll start with you.
So instantly the film got bonus points for having Desaad and Granny Goodness.
Oh man, Granny Goodness was so good to see.
But I questioned some of the music choices, especially the Icelandic singing when Aquaman goes into the water for about 4 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's odd. Yeah. I didn't think about it at the time, but it's odd.
I saw it again today, and I'm like, I got to write this down, because that really bugged me.
It yeah. felt like, what was that movie on Netflix with Will Smith? And you know what I'm talking about? Where they the new wave music or whatever they did from Iceland, where it is.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
But I liked it a lot more. Just seeing what they were able to do with Cyborg when he felt so left out in the first movie made it worthwhile.
Yeah, again, another person going back to what you talked about, introvert and lack of inclusion and stuff. Cyborg's role in it was really, really, really hit home. You know, and I'm sorry, I'm spinning off into something else, but there's some guys that A Lawyer's Guide to the Galaxy, some friends of mine that do a podcast called that. They're both property attorneys, and they do a podcast, and they're kind of geeky, introverted guys, good guys, but not guys that, you know, popularity was never something that was within their grasp growing up. And they told, and I was talking to him and listening to their episode about Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And they, the Asian female that,
Tran, is it Kelly Tran?
Rose Tico.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, Rose.
Rose, you're right. And they talked about how happy they were to see her on the screen. And I asked him why. And he said, because she was the mechanic, the nerd, the real, and it was good to see someone in the universe like that. And I was like, wow, I never looked at it from that way. I didn't hate the character like half the internet seemed to, but I didn't love the character. To me, it was just a throwaway character, but it was the character they most bonded with. And that's something I think that this film did do good with both Cyborg and Flash, to give some superheroes, larger-than-life figures, that had a very Marvel look of down-to-earth problems.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I liked that connection to it. Sorry to spin off, but I think that was something I did not expect.
Yeah, I also really liked the Superman and Flash battle at the memorial where Flash is running and looks over and Superman starts matching his speed.
Well, they did that in the Whedon. He turned and looked at him, and it took him off guard.
But it was a longer thing.
Yeah, the extra stuff was.
Yeah, they really fleshed that out a lot more. And yeah. I like that. So, yeah, getting rid of the family was a good thing too at the power plant.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Russian family.
Yeah.
So Doug, you've dove into it more than all of us. You've done your more research for you. What's going to be the legacy of this Snyder Cut to you?
Well, I don't want to call myself a Snyder bro, but you know,
hey, if the shoe fits,
Watchmen is one of my top five movies. Man of Steel, I think, is a great interpretation of Superman. I think there's a lot there. Batman vs. Superman, I think is so much more of a movie. I think Watchmen, Man of Steel, and Batman vs. Superman were ahead of their time. Jay Baruchel said Batman vs. Superman is the most expensive independent movie.
That's a good quote. That's a good quote.
Just because of all the rabbit holes that I've gone down, obviously Batman vs. Superman had Dark Knight Returns, Death of Superman, influences, but Excalibur, Grail and Arthurian Legend, Paradise Lost, all those references and influences, it's made me a better film student. It's made me a better reader. And so Justice League was great. Everybody loves a redemption story. For him to get his artistic impression was just great for me. I think some of the stuff got spoiled by the fact that it was in the theatrical cut, and that's a shame. A lot of the best action sequences, but the smaller character moments can't be replaced. The story, the heart got ripped out of this movie, and it got replaced with the Snyder Cut. It was probably a top 10 movie for me just because of what it means to put a cap on Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman and what it could mean for the future. But my favorite things, Clark and Lois, you really hit on the feeling that I got when the first time I read, what got me back into comics as a middle schooler was Death of Superman. And the Death of Superman was great, but Funeral for a Friend is what that story was all about. And the Reign of Superman was great, but you can't do that in a series like this. But, you go a significant amount of this movie without Superman. I think that's important. And Lois's scenes and even the Flash looking up to Superman was great. They told the importance of Superman. You got black suit Superman. You got Superman beating the hell out of Steppenwolf. I mean, it wasn't a lot of Superman, but there was a lot of really good stuff. Flash, like I mentioned, Cyborg. And I think the biggest character that people forget to talk about is the music. This is a completely different film because of the music. Tom Holkenberg was great. He was kind of an understudy of Hans Zimmer for Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman. But just for a quick example is that Wonder Woman museum scene. If you watch that, you play the typical, do Danny Elfman music, and it's jokey. And then with the Junkie XL stuff, it plays like Serious Terrorist. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think the legacy of the Snyder Cut is amazing, the positivity of the majority of the people in the movement. And I hope that people revisit Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman to realize that they may have, missed some things the first time around and what this could mean for the future. I hope some of these projects get made. So
I tell you, for me, and I think you said a lot of good things there. I think both of you did. I think for me, what's interesting in the legacy that I think about this is much like Kickstarter and GoFundMe and crowdfunding. There is an abnormal amount of power that was given to the people because of this film. It was the fans that got this film released. It was a lot. And what's crazy about that is we've learned anything from Twitter and the internet, that almost always goes the other direction. It's almost always a bad thing when people listen to their fans. But at this point, it was actually the fans that the film is targeted to making happy were the ones that were the loudest. Not the haters, not the trolls of the world. It was the people that loved Snyder 1, loved these characters that Snyder created 2. They're the ones that spoke up and got this film made. And hey, who knows? Fingers crossed. Maybe they're the ones that's going to give us Snyder life in the DC universe after this. I don't think so.
Yeah.
But you know what? It can happen, though. is it can inspire the next group of people that they let handle the projects, lean towards what Snyder was doing, and maybe he gets to live on in another group of upcoming writers, directors, cinematographers, and people like that. That maybe that'll be the long-lasting legacy. I hope so.
Yeah.
So all that said, in fact, I think I hear Missy just getting home, which is okay. We, you know, she can shut the door on the way in. But let's do a little bit of throw it to Missy, because there's a couple of things that I caught this week and the last week or two that I want to hit on. And Doug, we certainly want to hear your input on anything that you're sure. consuming right now in pop culture. We talked a lot about, I'm going to start real quick. I usually let someone else start, but there's something that I watched on the internet a couple days ago, might have been yesterday, that made me so happy to the core. And that was someone did a Lego version of the intro to Batman the Animated Series.
Nice.
And it was so great. And they also did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles right after. But to me, the pinnacle of all TV movie, whatever, of DC was Batman the Animated Series. I think it's one of the, I think it's the greatest animated show of all time. And to see a Lego version of it in, i.e. a Will Arnett, you know, Batman.
Yeah.
It was cheesy in all the right ways. It was beautiful. So if you haven't seen that, look for Lego Batman the Animated Series opening scene on YouTube and you'll find it.
I'll go look for that.
Love it.
So did you see Bruce Campbell's April Fool's joke?
Yes. Maybe the something that absolutely needs to be retroactively put into the film.
Yes.
Have you seen this, Doug?
It was Doctor Strange script that says he runs into Ash.
Ash, yes.
Have you seen a book? Does it have a skull on it or something like that?
Yeah, does it have a human face or a face out of human skin on it? And he quizzically looks? No.
That
yeah.
was one of the few April Fool's jokes that I kind of fell for.
Because it fits. More. It would be because yes. he has a history in the Marvel Universe. So
yeah
that was
Sam Raimi films. Yeah,
yeah. I would have loved to seen that.
Hey, let me ask you guys this. Another thing, we're on four episodes if you count the three initial release. But what I consider the greatest self-contained true superhero story of all time, Invincible on Amazon Prime debuted 2 weeks ago in the second week. And I'll say this, to me, the first episode was okay. The second episode was better. But by the third episode, this show has found its groove. And on the fourth episode, this is one of already my favorite superhero things I've seen since Batman the Animated Series in cartoon form.
I watched number four today. I want to go back and watch like all of them together.
Have you seen this, Doug?
I have not. It's Robert Kirkman and unbelievable voice cast, but I'm excited to watch it. I'll probably
And Ryan all in a row. And they're doing their best Ryan Otley version of his art. It looks unbelievable. The voice cast is both awesome and so alarming at times, because you know the voices and they're used in ways that you would have never expected them on there.
So all of the six were part of Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I was looking that
up. Yeah. They've, he farmed his world. You know, they're doing some things with the stories that make sense. They're kind of rushing and changing up some, the timeline of which things happen in the comic book, and it all works. I mean, they're not going to get, you know, the same amount of issues to make this show work, but, you know, I can't stress enough, it's not for kids. It's pretty bloody. And makes no apologies for it. But boy, it's one of those rare things to where it's a superhero show, it's a very violent show, and still touches on some very, you know, human aspects. Like Mark is really not just getting his powers, but he's also starting to date for the first time. And they do a good job of capturing that in the show. So highly recommend. For me so far, it's a 4.5 out of 5. No doubt that by the time this is done, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm probably at 4 right now, but it goes up every week.
Yeah, it's worth it. You've been watching Winter Soldier, Falcon and Winter Soldier?
I have.
Where are our thoughts on that? We'll hit on that real quick. I did break down to the first episode, and when me and Matt Basler did it, we kind of focused on why people were comparing it to the first episode of Wanda and why that was kind of absurd. But now that we're fully, you know, we're four episodes into it now. Is that what it is, or three? I can't.
I think it's three.
Three episodes into it, we're now into a plot.
Yeah.
And what you know, death threats for Kurt Russell's son aside, what's your thoughts on it so far, Doug?
I'm struggling with it because I need to get into it a little bit more. The first episode, you know, started off with a bang with that action sequence, you know, which was pretty amazing for, you know, quote unquote television. And then it was a lot of plot and things like that. And then the second episode, I lost interest in. And so I need to kind of reframe myself because Winter Soldier is probably my favorite Marvel movie.
I'd argue it's the best. Yeah. It's pretty tough.
Yeah. I think that's in my top five comic book movies of all time. And so I just need to dedicate some time to it and get through episode two and three. You know, the Wyatt Russell thing I think could be pretty cool. You know, the fact that anybody's given him crap online is ridiculous.
It's amazing because and Matt Basler and I just we had a big chuckle about this. It's almost like people forgot how stories work.
Yeah.
He's not replacing Captain America. For the point of the story, he is replacing Captain America.
Yeah.
By the end of the story, he will not be Captain America. Just chill out, people.
Yeah.
You know, Jay, you and I talked, and I'll ask you your thoughts so far on the 3-2, but you and I talked, and you had mentioned that in the third episode, you know, with them going to Madripoor and what that bar meant and all that things. One thing that has been more fun with this episode, it's what we thought we were getting on WandaVision before they kind of pulled the rug out from under us. But what they've done with this series so far is in three episodes, they've gave us almost an extra 40 years of Marvel story that they now have access to make stories out of.
Yeah.
And that's unbelievable that they did that in such an easy way.
And that's been one of my favorite things about it is I'm sitting here and like, oh, crap, it's Isaiah Bradley. Oh, that's Eli. That's Patriot. And then it's like in Madripoor, I'm like, oh, there's Wolverine's bar.
Yeah.
Like, all the little Easter eggs that they're putting in there just... my wife harasses me about it because I get so excited about that type of stuff.
Yeah, well, I almost... I mean, I've got vaulted ceilings, and I almost put a hole in my ceiling jumping when Evan Peters showed up in WandaVision as Quicksilver.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. They've packed a lot of little subtle nuances in this show. And I had Tom, the other host of our show... He likes it, but he says the reason he likes it is Falcon and Winter Soldier is a lot like pro wrestling to him. The plot's kind of thin, and anybody can show up at any time, and that's what he loves about it. And that's kind of what they've done. Although the plot's getting better, they literally at this point I expect any Marvel character to show up into it.
Yeah.
So I'm down. So what else do you have before?
So
Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh, God, that's a good bring up. That's a good bring. I absolutely love that film.
Yep.
I'm a diehard old school Godzilla fan. I've seen every Godzilla film. The 90s ones were some of the best films of all time, to where Godzilla had his nuclear meltdown and his energy had to be transferred to his son. His son became an even more powerful Godzilla. Everything about Godzilla makes me happy. I've got
even Matthew Broderick.
That's Zilla. That's not Godzilla. I got a little stuffed Godzilla over here. There's a lot of things about, this is one of the rare times where an absurd, ridiculous, pointless film exceeded all my expectations. It to me is a solid 5 out of 5. I loved it. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I went to see it in the IMAX, even though I had it on HBO Max. I had to see it on the big screen. Just absolutely loved it. I mean, like Skull Island. That was, you know, great cast and just fun with the King Kong myth. And then Godzilla 2014 was cool. I like God's King of the Monsters. And then, you know, this one was just perfect. You know, you really felt, you know, Kong was great. Just everything. And, you know, you're just smiling the entire time. And I'm like, you know, I see some of these people like grading it down for this or that. And I'm like, what did you expect? I mean,
it's just
that first shot of Kong on the aircraft carrier or the giant ship just socking Godzilla in the face. I'm like, the CGI was really good. And just, you know, Kong running around with an axe was just awesome.
My wife, who is not a big giant monster fan, she did not watch the other ones, but she did sit down because we've been on vacation this week, and I didn't get to watch it when it was the day it was released, which I typically would do because we were out of town. But the first morning we were back and we were still on vacation, I woke up, made a pot of coffee, and turned the movie on. That was my first. And so she happened to come downstairs much earlier than I thought. So she sat and watched it with me. And she goes, about 15, 20 minutes into this in the movie, she goes, "I feel like a lot has happened so far." She goes,
moved.
Yeah. She goes, I go, "Sweetheart, we're just getting from scene to scene until we see Godzilla fight King Kong. That's all we're doing." And she goes, "Maybe because I haven't seen the other films." I go, no, you're overthinking it. You're overthinking it. All you need to know is that this film is going to end in two great things: Kong versus Godzilla and Mecha Godzilla. And that is all I need to be happy in life.
So I haven't seen it yet. My son wanted to watch all the movies to get caught up, so we'll probably watch it this weekend.
I even put out a tweet and said this might be the best non-MCU universe that's going right now. It's the giant monster universe that they've created.
There's Twitter hashtags trying to continue that. You know, there's plenty of monsters out there.
Mm-hmm. So if the rumors are to be believed, there was no plans to continue after this film. Because of the massive success there's already talk supposedly with Del Toro to combine it into the Pacific Rim universe.
Oh, that'd be cool. That first Pacific Rim was fantastic.
Yeah, and the second one would have worked as a Disney Plus or HBO Max. It wasn't as great as a sequel, but it's still, there's some parts of it. Certainly, I like John Boyega a lot. Scott Eastwood, you know, riding his dad's coattails, I don't mind.
Yeah.
The first Pacific Rim, even my wife, who is not a fan of sci-fi or giant monsters, she's like, "Well, this is a pretty good movie." I'm like, "Yeah, it's a great movie."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, the Suicide Squad. Did you see the preview?
Oh, I did. I did. One of the few trailers I got to see this week, the other being Space Jam. You know, I'm excited. I'm excited.
All the John Cena stuff was great. As Peacemaker?
Yeah, what about that? Did you guys hear that? John Cena's Peacemaker spinoff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Must be so good that they just decided to do it.
I think it's an easy call with, you know, I think during the pandemic, James Gunn said he had, you know, time. He just scribbled down some ideas for a series, and it's a no-brainer. You put one of the biggest wrestling stars in the world in a HBO Max series, you know, that's going to pay for itself.
It'll work too. And imagine, you know, obviously we're only speculating because we haven't seen the film, but I'm going to believe that it's going to work because it's such a silly character.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you were to put him in there and put him like, certainly, I don't think John Cena has quite the chops of Dwayne Johnson to pull off such a serious villain like a Black Adam will be. Mm-hmm. But you put him in there for a guy like Peacemaker, that could easily fit into that Kick-Ass universe as well as that Suicide Squad universe. Yeah. I think John Cena will excel.
Yeah,
I think his best role in film has been in Cock Blockers. Yeah. You know, so.
So
James Gunn defined Peacemaker as a douchey Captain America.
That's it.
I'm sure you'd get a villain or two to really play off that really well.
Yeah, the villains will almost be the more likable characters if they do it. Exactly. It's what's going to be great about it.
Luckily, yeah, my wife wasn't...
It's like a politician that you like that keeps saying the wrong thing. It's just like, but yeah, the villains could be really awesome with that.
The good thing about that preview is my wife wasn't around when I showed it to the kids and they got to the Field of Dicks stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I actually liked the Green Band trailer better than the Red Band trailer. I thought it showed kind of the... It was a little bit less jokey and a little bit more action heavy. I like the Green Band trailer.
I didn't watch that.
Cool too.
I didn't watch it. I'll have to go back and see it.
Yeah, I need to check that out too. I only saw the.
It's online, but it only played in front of. It played in front of Godzilla vs. Kong.
I even said, going back to Godzilla vs. Kong, I said maybe the most subtle great thing about Godzilla vs. Kong is the fact that. $10 million worth of people went to go see it at the theater in this pandemic world we live in. So it holds the record for the biggest pandemic opening, which if it takes a monkey fighting an iguana in order to see the world straighten itself up, I'm excited about that. That's exactly what I want to see in life.
Yeah, the total, that was like the $9 million was like the Thursday release. I think the total weekend was something like $50 million when it's available to a lot of subscribers. So, you know, a lot of these studios, old school versus new school, they're going to rethink this.
Yeah, and you know, it also, you know, obviously there were some movies that came out and we got to see them on Disney Plus and stuff because of it, but because of the pandemic and stuff, but it was a very good movie to bring people back out of their house too. It's a movie Absolutely. That really lives on the big screen. I didn't see it there, but I would. Yeah. I would greatly go see it. You got anything else before we start wrapping up?
They're going to do San Diego Comic-Con. Did you see this? At Thanksgiving time.
Oh, well, I know Planet. November. Yeah, I know Planet Comic-Con is set for August, and if it's in, I've got my ticket left over from last year, so I'm going to that.
Okay.
I don't know that I would go to San Diego Comic-Con. I just don't know that. I mean, that's good. I mean, Planet Comic-Con has become, outside of C2E2 in Chicago, it's become the biggest Midwestern show. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know that I'd travel all the way out to San Diego to go to my first convention until we figure out how to get it right again.
At Thanksgiving time, no less.
Yeah, that'd be a tough one. I've been to Comic-Con in San Diego. I went before it was an entertainment expo. And I loved it. And then I went after studios took over as the driving force behind it. And I hated it as a comic book fan. But still, you know, it's just good to see, you know, comic book fans back, you know.
So the question is going to be, are the panels going to be live, though? Are they going to have them Skype in?
People need money.
Yeah.
So we'll see. They're certainly not going to let you take pictures in the same way they used to.
Yeah.
Not for a while, anyway. Hey, there were 40,000 people in the ballpark in Texas.
Wow.
So, you know, whatever. Doug, let's, before we wrap up, what have you, you know, we talked a lot about just now in our Throw It to Missy segment, and you did bring up Godzilla versus Kong, but what else is getting you going right now, pop culture-wise, for TV, whatever, comics, whatever?
Oh, shoot. You know, been watching the Snyder Cuts, Justice's Gray Edition, which... Typically, I don't really like black and white stuff, but it works really well for a CGI heavy movie. Love Godzilla versus Kong, and gonna definitely get into Incredible and Winter Soldier. So, I've really been enjoying HBO Max. You know, like I've been able to watch Kurosawa movies on it, and you know, whenever I've got short amount of time, I always go back to the DC animated. You know, the Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series and Justice League. Those are all on HBO Max, and those are always quick, easy, 20-minute watches.
Oh, man. As much as I've praised Batman the Animated Series, which deserves its praise, Superman was good, especially the Lobo episode was one of my favorite things. And then the entirety of the Justice League Unlimited and all that was a great overlapping story that lasted a long time. That was good cartoons.
They brought in Amanda Waller and Darkseid and
the
New Gods.
Yeah, cool. They did it great. So before we the train comes into station, tell everybody again where they can find you.
Yeah, I'm Doug Verby at Doug Verby on Twitter, at STLcast on at STLcast Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and
and
new shows on the STL cast on YouTube about every 2 weeks.
So you release them via YouTube, or do you release audio only, or just do the YouTube?
No, I just do the YouTube.
Which is probably why you only do every 2 weeks, because there's a lot more editing involved in that.
Yeah. I usually just go with what comes up, but I've been editing some of those, been using StreamYard, so it's been fun, but.
Well, I'll definitely check it out, and we appreciate... You know, I'm Jay. I'm glad you reached out to him. I think it was probably our most intelligent dive into a movie, like I said earlier. But it certainly was. Again, of all the weird things that Hollywood's given us over the years, and all the oddities that come with certain films, and I referenced Blade Runner, and I would have thought that the millions of Blade Runner cuts would have been the most weird thing when it comes to film. But who knew that a little superhero film and a director that forgot his love for color pretty quick would give us the most crazy story in a long time when it comes to a movie. So I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. I love talking movies, love talking Snyder, and love talking anything comic book movies. genre stuff. It's been a blast. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, if anything else pops up, we definitely would love to have you back, especially to and in fact, I've got a handful of filmmaker friends that have been on the show a handful of times and stuff too. I could put you in touch with a couple of guys that might be fun to talk to, local guys. Absolutely. So
thank you.
We'll do it, and that's all I got. Jace, tell everybody bye.
Bye.
We're going to wrap it up. Thanks, Doug, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Thank you very much.